and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian.
And today we have the exuberant and exciting Mr. Healy Cipher with us. Say hello.
Hey!
you didn't think I'd do it.
Oh, wait, no, you're supposed to do the whole show that way. Yeah. Oh, you already messed it up, dude.
Pleasure to be here, guys. Thanks for having
me. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being on. And, you know, as always, we want your feedback about today's show. So make sure to leave some comments or feedback or some notes for our guest in the discuss comment on the site, futurecommerce.fm below. And you can scroll down and make sure you hit the subscribe button as well. Leave us a 5-star on iTunes. We're also on Google Play. And you can listen from your Amazon Echo at any time from TuneIn Radio with the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce Podcast. And she's trying to play it now. Don't you do that, you insufferable. Okay, so anyway, welcome Healy. Could you just kind of kick us off, you know, the people may not know who you are out there. I'm sure they should know who you are, so maybe you can fill us in a little bit.
Yeah, safe to say there's a pretty strong chance I have no idea. Happy to give some background. So my name's Healy Cipher. I'm the CEO and co-founder of a company called Oak. And my background is about 5 years ago, I was serving as the chief of staff to the CTO of eBay. And this at the time was when eBay was eBay and PayPal and GSI. And we would pitch retailers for hours at a time who came in about the future of commerce. And the challenge is that we would always pitch them e-commerce solutions. And at the ending, they'd always say one thing. Okay, this is great, but what about technology for my physical stores, which are, you know, 95% of my sales. Mark, the CTO, and John, the CEO, and I said, hey guys, let me start a team. You know, I don't need a lot of budget. It's all going to be about bringing the best of online thinking into the physical world. And so they really gave me no budget of people. In cubes, but over the course of the next 2 years, we grew it to a 17-person off-campus secret lab, had launches with companies like Rebecca Minkoff and Nordstrom and Kate Spade and Sony and Toms and Simon and Westfield, and got a really clear sense of as eBay as a company is breaking apart, there's a lot of organizational shuffling, and a few of us found ourselves kind of asked with that question, which is, what are we going to do with our lives now? And so we all called each other up as we were kind of out of work and said, hey, what do you think about starting a company that just pushes this mission forward? We said, great, let's do it. So Oak as a company is 15 months old. There's 14 of us. We're headquartered in San Francisco. We've got a showcase in New York, a satellite in Seattle. And we believe the future of retail will be a software-defined future. We believe that stores be living, breathing software ecosystems. And the future we believe in is one that's actually not about technology, ironically. Mm. It's about the reason you're in the store. It's about the beautiful products, the intelligent people. It's about the material and the wood and the metal and the glass. It's about the experience that makes you want to be immersed with that brand and lifestyle. And about technology, finding those customer journeys that are the brand and supporting them, about finding opportunities to reduce friction, about empowering associates, about, you know, redefining what it even means to be mobile and having a store that as you go throughout it changes and those authentic materials come alive around you. You keep your phone in your pocket and it just knows who you are and it makes it a better experience. This is the future we believe in. And so we're building that. We're building the first connected store platform, and the first product we built, we actually started in the fitting room.
Nice, man. This just reminds me of the show Mr. Selfridge with Jeremy Piven. Have you ever watched that?
No, but I do love Jeremy Piven.
Oh man, you got to watch that. It's like it's kind of like early on in sort of the department store, and it's like this big production, you know. And it's like Mr. Selfridge, the main guy played by Jeremy Piven, makes the department store come alive again. And I feel like that's kind of like what you're doing. I feel like, you know, almost on the show, it's almost like, you know, department stores almost used to be cooler back then. At least that's the way they make it sound. And now it's like, man, it's kind of like this boring sort of blah experience that I think, you know, with all the technology and all of, you know, all of the all of what we have, we can take, you know, stores and make them great again.
if you're printing hats, I'm buying them. Make stores great again. Yeah,
exactly. Actually, to be fair, I did rip that off from Shop Talk. They recently, I saw, they had a banner ad of something like make retail great again. Or something like that.
Yeah. I love that you copped to it, but you shouldn't have. You should have just owned that, Brian.
I should have just owned that. I should have owned that. But to be fair, like, it, you know, I think it's really exciting. Like, what the mission of Oak is super exciting to me, because I feel like this is something that needs to be changed based on where we're at in technology and as an economy and as a culture. This is, it's, I can't believe how far I feel like in-store experience is behind where we're at. Anyway, so what led to the creation of the mirror? You know, what, so like, you know, you were in this secret lab in eBay. You started, you know, with two people, you moved to 17. Was that mirror sort of pioneered back in eBay? Did Oak pioneer that? And, you know, and maybe tell us a little bit about what it can do just for the people that don't know. Yeah.
Totally. And even just before I even get into the details there, I wanted to make a quick commentary on why retail is so important.
Yeah.
I think people miss it. So, the reason we're starting retail, by the way, we love retail. That's all we think about. But if you want to change how people expect to engage with the physical world, you start in retail. It is 67% of disposable income. It employs 1 out of 4 people in the country. It's the place where you start. And so we get so excited about it because we see this opportunity to truly redefine how people want to engage with physical spaces. And, you know, one of the things about retail that I think, you know, you're kind of saying, make retail great again. Well, the truth is we are at this very, very important turning point in retail. And that turning point actually revolves around massive economic shifts. I mean, if you look at how retailers in the past, they put down more stores. That was mid-century, right? More down. The American dream was, you know, energy consumption and big cars and driving distances and suburbia. And so you put down more stores and it grew top line revenue to the point now. In the U.S., this is true, we have 46 square feet of retail space for every man, woman, and child.
Oh, man.
That's like my first apartment in New York. Is you have dollars per square foot going down. And so, you know, there's this, someone from GGP just said this, I forget who it was, but it was this really brutal statement, which is, we don't have an over-retailed country, we have an under demolished retail.
Yeah. That's amazing.
In this post Amazon era, you can't as a retailer compete on proximity, selection, and price because you will lose. The only way you can truly compete is on experience. And that is where we're getting to in retail. So
right.
One of the things that we did, and this I promise we'll get back to why we created the mirror, is we look at the retail experience in the same way that e-com thinks of their conversion funnel and is always meticulously optimizing that conversion funnel. We take the same lens and approach it to retail. So, you know, if you're a good e-commerce person, what do? You know how many people are going through your funnel from the homepage to the product pages to the cart to checkout. And you know the drop-off between every single one. And you know, at eBay, as an example, we would spend tens of millions of dollars just making sure that pages would load literally milliseconds faster because we knew we'd see a return. It was reducing friction. If you take that metaphor of that kind of that online session and put it into the store session, it actually holds up in an amazing way. So think about this. You walk into a store and you're probably doing one of two things. You know what you want, search. You'd like inspiration, browse. Search versus browse. Huh. Like a homepage.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at mannequins and shelves and visual merchandising. You're collecting information about those garments. What are you doing? Those are product pages. You're collecting information. You put them into the fitting room. That's just like a cart. In the cash wrap line, that's just like checkout. And all these stats hold up. So, for example, if you see an item you like in front of you, but the size you want isn't physically there, 47% of customers will not ask for help. It's just like if on the webpage it says out of stock, they're not going to click through. If something's on the line, they perceive as being over 7 minutes long, there's a 79% abandonment rate. Think about that. Like, you know, we've all done it. You walk into a grocery store, you see massive lines. And what do? you immediately walk out and you convince yourself that you didn't actually need a TP after all, because you don't.
It's so true.
But then on the flip side, there are other opportunities. If someone goes into a fitting room, the chance they buy is 2/3, and the chance they buy anything at all is 7 times higher. So how do you optimize those places? So we looked at the fitting room as this obvious place of the best customers with the highest intent, with an ability to gather unprecedented data and to make them even more loyal customers. So the way the mirror works is you walk into the fitting room. It's a beautiful mirror. And we learned the hard way. It's got to be beautiful. A UI comes through the glass, turning it into a touchable interface. And from there, you can do a bunch of amazing things. You can change the lighting. It recognizes everything you brought in using RFID, so it feels like magic. And you can request other sizes, cuts, and colors, or recommended items right from the glass. And the moment you make that request, it goes to an associate who now has perfect information. They know where you are, how fast you want it, and exactly what you want, and where it is in the store. And then you as a customer can stay in the safety of your room, pants off, and have that associate at your fingertips. And when the associate responds, it's not some robot responding. It's their face and name. You're not dehumanizing that commerce experience. You're rehumanizing the commerce experience, which is a big part of the thesis for stores.
Yeah.
You get the items you want. The associate, by the way, also sees everything else in the fitting room, not just what you've asked for. So they get a sense from 0 to 1 of what you're asking for, what look you're going for, sizes you think you are. So now you've done this perfect thing where you've bridged this chasm of customers not wanting to be solicited to. So they don't want associates to say, hey, would you like some help? Can I help with anything? But talk to associates, the chance they buy is 5 times higher. So now you've got an associate who's there the moment you want them, who is making it way, way easier to shop. It's this beautiful interaction. And then, you know, the last thing you do, which is fun, is if you're still deciding, you push to your phone, buy later, or, and we're just going to launch this this fall, if all goes well, the ability to buy what's in the fitting room by tapping your phone on the glass, or buying things that weren't in the store but are online, the same mechanism, a blended.
Oh, shoot. That's amazing.
So happy to tell you about the results we've seen to date, but that's at least how the tech works. We've taken the mirror now, you know, our first iteration was 10 inches deep in 2 pieces. Now it's 1 piece, 3 inches deep. It's a 55-inch 4K versus a small 22-inch. It's got a proximity sensor. So this is pretty cool. This is a new one I've told anyone about. If you pull your wheelchair into the fitting room, and I love this, the UI recognizes it, and the whole UI automatically scrolls down, so it's right at your eye height. Mm. It's beautiful.
That's amazing. I love that.
I get goosebumps. It's so beautiful. If you walk in and you're 6'5", which I wish I were, I'll be honest, the UI will come up. So it's easier. I mean, these really simple, it's so complicated to make a piece of technology simple and beautiful. And we've spent so much time thinking about it. So there's a bunch of exciting stuff coming out, which we're really, really jazzed about.
Nice.
And you know, there's really simple things you do. Like our CTO comes from Xbox and Microsoft Ventures, and he taught us out of the gates that whenever you have a new game, you're designing a new game, what you do is you give the player an immediate win. They play it, they win, they want to keep playing it. When you walk into the fitting room and it recognizes items, we have the lighting go up really bright. And almost every single person, the first thing they do is they change the lighting because it's a little too bright for them.
Nice.
That's on purpose.
Wow.
Change the lighting, and now they go, oh, I know how to use this thing. We've actually had, since launching over, it's been 9 months now, 20,000 sessions in three cities around the world now, 84% customer engagement.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Who have you launched with? I know Rebecca Minkoff, Ralph Lauren, anyone else you want to name?
So we launched with Ralph Lauren. Rebecca Minkoff was actually launched under the eBay banner, just to be okay. We launched recently with Gary Weber, which is the largest retailer in Germany. They have, I think it's a total of 1,200 stores. We're obviously not in all those doors yet, but
yeah.
But and a lot more launches coming up.
Ah, oh, congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. We're really excited about it.
So and obviously the mirror is a huge part of what you're doing. Is there anything else that you've kind of got in terms of products or services or anything that you want to talk about right now?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So part of the connected store platform we're building is an inherent ability to create what we think is kind of, it's a brand new backend. So we're taking the best of online digital assets, the best of in-store inventory, creating a true commerce catalog, which means we now have digital assets, inventory, CRM, and point of sale in a single place. All to say, we can build any experience within weeks now.
Wow.
And so the fitting room, you know, I'll give you a little data dump. 84% engagement since we launched. That's awesome. We've done pretty detailed analyses of basket size. If someone uses the mirror for a digital request versus doesn't use it at all, on average, the basket size is 59% higher.
Wow.
We've seen a conversion lift overall of about 10%. And here's the crazy thing. All of this, with all of it, they're spending 40% less time in the fitting room because it's so efficient to communicate with the associates.
Hmm. That's amazing.
So the dollars per minute per square foot is insane, but it's not just, you know, customer, associate, and productivity metrics we can gather. We now have access to data that's literally never been gathered in the history of retail before. So we know obvious things, right? Like what percentage of your traffic is going to the fitting room? What's the conversion rate for every fitting room session? What's the average duration? How do you break that down, you know, by demographies of gender, age, whatever it is? Mm-hmm. But we also now know conversion rates for every single SKU. So as a merchandiser, and this has never been done, as a merchandiser, you know, of the 5 sweaters you just rolled out in your fall line, 3 sweaters go in all the time. And 2 of them are purchased all the time. One of them goes in a bunch and for whatever reason is not purchased at the same rate. And now you can see what they're doing. Are they asking for a size up? Are they going for a shade lighter? That's never been gathered before. Now you know the difference between hits and misses and if it's a near miss or not, and can actually make changes in live time. And we also now know, and this is where it gets really cool and really important, we are able to track for the first time associate service levels. How long does it take when you ask for an item for that item to physically enter the room? We know that.
Nice. That's huge.
And so, of course, what do? We run some regressive analysis. So guess what? There is a massive correlation between service level and conversion.
Not surprising. Mindy, I could see why at the beginning of the show you described this just like an online experience, because that's how I think about shopping cart online. You know, what are the factors that are going to increase conversion? And you've got it right there.
One of the things that I think is really, you know, that now brings a question to my mind is, you know, we have a really big problem in today in digital commerce in channel attribution, and it starts to sound like you're creating multi-channels within what would usually be considered to be a single channel, which would be your brick and mortar retail. How do you sell that into a company, or how do you kind of manage the channel and attribution issues that might bring up? And maybe if you could pontificate a bit on the kinds of challenges like this that we'll have to face in the future when we start seeing more, you know, online, offline convergence.
Yeah, totally. I promise we'll answer that. Do you mind if I tell you the 2 products you built, the next ones, or do you want me to skip it?
Oh, shoot. Yeah, we didn't get to those. Yeah, go ahead.
So anyway, service levels, the reason that it takes so long for customers' items is because associates use radios in stores. And it's really crappy. It's loud. You know, the whole experience is like you got to grab someone's UPC, you got to scan it, and then you go, "Are you guys there?" And they go, "Yeah, I'm here." It's like, "Okay. You ready to do the stock lookup?" They're like, "Yeah, I'm ready." Okay, it's 546. It's red with gold trim. And they're like, "Gold with red trim?" It's like, "No, it's red." It just takes forever. And so because we had that there, we built what we call the Oak Stock Room. It's a touchscreen you put in the stock room. And whenever there's a request from a customer in a fitting room, from an associate in the front of the house, the stock room gets a big visual request of that item. It's told where to bring it in the store. And it starts timing them. And we've taken that average fulfillment interval. This is a single example from a single brand. I can't say who it is. We've taken that fulfillment interval, that service level, from an average of 6 minutes and 15 seconds to 1 minute and 39.
Wow.
This is now bringing essentially an artificial intelligence era to the physical store that's directing humans on what to do. Because we see what's sold at the point of sale. And if it's a high velocity SKU, we run an algorithm that determines, should we replace that in the front of the store right now? So we don't have that customer who won't ask for help, not having to ask for help. we make sure the right things in the right place at the right time. And so as we track this stuff, literally the point of sale asks humans in the stock room to bring things out in the front of the house to guarantee that customers don't have to ask for help. That's insane. And that's,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I can think of,
yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. Your next product. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Well, no, the next one is just more like, it's interesting where, we love these things called WebSockets, and our communication protocol allows for some really fancy things. So we're building this thing out we call responsive signage. So the second part of it is this sign, we call it responsive signage, because the digital signage is listening to data events. And so if it starts raining outside, guess what? All the signs start showing umbrellas and trench coat content. If it's all of a sudden really sunny outside, all of a sudden all the signs show sunglasses and tank tops. The point is that the store is living and breathing and is literally responding to the world around it in live time.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. I love that. I think, you know, weather is actually a huge factor in purchasing habits. Obviously, all clothing lines are seasonal. So why not take that to a micro level even? That's awesome.
Totally.
Actually, speaking of micro level, I just kind of want to take a little sidestep here because it's interesting your journey. I was looking into a little bit of how you even came to be at eBay in the first place. And I believe that you worked for a company called Milo a number of years ago. And so that might be a blast from the past. But I've mentioned I have another podcast called Mage Talk, which is a Magento-centric podcast. And I happen to speak about a bunch of those early eBay acquisitions, like those 2010, 2011 acquisitions all the time, because it was, you know, part of that era that they acquired Magento and Milo, Red Laser, all these acquisitions were all kind of in that same era. And I really bought into, and you know, it's hilarious because it's become sort of a punchline to a joke now. But I really bought into this idea that we would have a single connected, you know, commerce fabric is such a dirty word now. But you know, we would have this idea of being able to marry all of our channels together and have data be able to flow through all of those channels and have like a 360 customer view. And these are things that are actually coming. Like you're doing this at Oak today, but part of Milo's focus was local, and I can't help but notice that you're still doing local because department stores and retail experiences are intensely local, right? And so I'm just wondering what kind of experiences that you have sort of over the arc of your career that's kind of led you to this point that, you know, is there something about the local, you know, that local retail experience that, you know, really excites you or impassions you and kind of drives what you do at Oak?
Yeah, totally. I mean, to kind of talk about the history of eBay Inc. I mean, just to be really clear, I was the ultimate eBay Inc. fanboy. I believed that what they were building was and had the opportunity to be truly world changing because it really was a fully omni solution. And I was heartbroken when the company separated. I'll be open about that until the day I die. But was it fodder for how I thought about the world? Absolutely. And do I think that the word offline isn't even a real word anymore? Also, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's the challenge. You know, you call it local. That's the exact right word. It is local. It is the ability if you have a personal experience. And, you know, look at any company that starts online and starts doing really well, Bonobos, Warby Parker. How do you know they've really made it? What do they do?
Yeah, they're coming into the IRL now, right? These are real stores now.
They're right? IRL, exactly. Yeah. They open up stores,
right?
And so, to me, you know, I think that, and you kind of asked earlier about, you know, when you're selling into this, what are the challenges? Structurally, retail is changing, where it's consolidating its direct to consumer DTC channels. We've got single buyers, single merchandisers, and single owners over all the channels that are direct to consumer facing, and I think that has to be the future. And the retailers that are doing that are already on the way there. And those who aren't are having a lot of trouble because guess what? They don't even know. Like, yeah, the overlap of what's sold in store or online can be as low as 15% in some of these companies. It's insane.
Wow.
So, you know, when I think about local, I love it. I love physical experiences. You know, even though my head is in this, you know, incredibly tech forward place, we're looking at bleeding edge technology and kind of creating new form factors and, you know, and turning wood into touch panels or whatever it is. I go home and you know, to heat my house, I go out back with an axe and I chop wood and I bring into the woodwork fire oven. You know, we have chickens in the backyard. And I think there's something about being a human that is inherently about tangibility. And tactile sensations are a big part of why we're here. And I don't want that to go away. And I think that as much as, you know, virtual experiences can be very, very cool. I'm a big proponent of the physical, and I don't think it's going to go away. I think physical environments are going to change a ton. And I think retail is going to change a ton, but I also think it's going to stay. And, you know, look at some of these interesting indicators of it. I was talking to a big credit card network, and they were saying that they were tracking the percentage of spend happening at boutiques versus larger stores. And get this, a fast growing percentage of sales, 40% growing, is at boutiques with 5 to 10 locations.
Wow.
Yeah. That's as
low. That's crazy.
You know, we're Instagram driven. I want to take a photo of the cool shades of the jacket that I can only get at the downtown Santa Cruz store called Stripe. You know, like that's part of it that's interesting. So
here's an interesting follow-up to that. I'm just kind of curious. We talk about local, we've kind of talked about online and offline and all of that. What about like experiences in home? Have you thought about that at all? Like, what would be me? What are some types of maybe even like in-home shopping experiences that you expect to pop up in the, you know, in the few years? I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah. So here's one of the one of the things we do as a company is we play the role of associate with our clients and our partners, and we actually spend time on the floor as associates to get a sense of what it's really like. And I was at a big department store, and they said the biggest challenge they had was, they would make all these beautiful styles and customers, and the customers would then buy all these styles, and they'd get home and they'd open up their bag, and guess what would be in the bag? It wasn't styles, it was products. And so things that I think we're going to get to is actually kind of like a more one-on-one relationship with stylists you know and trust from brands you know and trust.
I like that.
And to me, that, you know, I think conversational commerce is a very overused buzz term, but that idea of, I've got someone who knows me, who knows my body, who knows my style, who pushes me to kind of stay up with it. And that is a connection that I have all the time. I think that that's going to be something that pervades throughout the different aspects. You know, I have a big event coming on. I'd love someone who knows what I have in my closet, give me suggestions. And look, they're going to sell me on stuff and I'll buy it. And increasingly, associates and brand ambassadors and stylists are actually going to become, instead of right now, I think they can often be thought of as a liability because it's someone who may not care. I think that it's going to become more of a career. Anyway, I don't really answer the question, but I definitely think those people will have a presence in your home. I don't know how it's going to be exactly.
What about like AR? How do you see, like right now you can do light AR apps via Google Tango or Blipbar and other companies out there. How do you see AR kind of playing into the in-store experience? It seems kind of like it'd be right in line with the mirror in some ways. Like it's not quite the same thing, obviously, but seems like it'd be complementary to what you're doing. Kind of, where do you see it going?
Yeah, no. I mean, we like to say that we're building our connected store platform allows for augmented reality without the goggles.
Yes.
That's what it is, right? Is
you, yeah.
And the store is literally changing around you and presenting information to you as if you had goggles on, but it's just in the store. Which, by the way, is pretty nice because then your senses aren't muted.
Right.
Kind of there. And, no, totally. I think that's kind of what we're building. It's just a different take on it. And in the same way that, you know, we're trying to redefine the definition of mobility, realizing that your phone is actually not mobile. If you set it on the table and walk away, it will sit there. You are
right.
So give yourself this augmented reality experience where your head is up in the store with the people experiencing the products and the authentic material. That to me is part of it. You know, I don't know that walking into a store and having goggles strapped in your face, whether it's VR or AR, is going to be the move. And I actually vehemently disagree that having someone open up your native application as they walk into the store is the right move. All these native apps, you know, if you have the native app downloaded and if you have the Bluetooth on and if you're one of the people that were beacon ready, if a store said, hey, welcome to the store, first time, you didn't care. You thought it was cool, maybe. If they gave you a notification within 30 minutes more time, the chance you deleted the app went up 300%.
That's crazy. I love it. Good stat.
and, and the physiology supports it. I mean, basically, putting your there's an amazing professor called Amy Cuddy, and she talks about how physiology affects your mental state. If you stand in a power position with your arms open, your chest wide,
you're
all this, right? So, you know, dopamine goes up, cortisol goes down. Well, guess what? Text necking, which is that position you are in when you're texting and you're on your phone, has a submissive mechanism to your mind state. So the physiology actually makes you want to shop and interact with people less. So why would you make someone put your head down on the phone you walked in?
No, I love it. Go ahead, Philip.
It's interesting because we see Google and some of the other juggernauts in this space kind of pushing us still toward that direction where progressive web apps are supposed to be the next thing where we can push, you know, the web, the mobile web experience into an app experience, you know, as a push mechanism. So I walk into my local Target and Google will just tell me I'm in Target and it will tell me, you know, it already does that today. And I can click on the Google Now icon and it will, you know, I can possibly see a map of the store depending on the store. There's all these kinds of things where they're trying to marry that web experience into the native app experience. So it's interesting that that seems to be at odds with where I think the actual like what you're talking about, the actual desire of people is going. I think we do want to be connected. We don't necessarily want to be viewing life through a 4-inch phone screen, but right now, you know, everything in our world is telling us to go there. In fact, I stand in line at Brooks Brothers and they want me to text a mobile coupon. And I, you know, everybody's trying to push me through the digital channels, even in retail right now. And so exactly. It's database. I don't know that anybody really, you know, I think everyone's trying to compete again, you know, for customer data, for, you know, that last little bit of of conversion or to get you into another channel. So I'm really not sure how that all plays out, but I hear what you're saying. I think it's great. And I agree with it fully.
I think if you ask me, there is a silent but vicious battle going on right now. Amazon, Apple, Google, Facebook, and that battle is for the ultimate offline cookie. They want to know who you are across borders, and retailers don't want to share their customers or convince their customer and different than any other customer, which is a whole thing that we can get into if you really want to, because it's both admirable but also absurd. But that's the back, and they want to know who are you when you walk in and give that experience, and it's this really dangerous thin line, because basically, personalization is kind of a dirty word. It just means kind of, you know, gathering data about you. But personalization is actually, in my mind, it is only something you think about when things go wrong. If something goes really well and it's just that exact right piece of data that's contextualized in the exact way you wanted it, you're like, oh, that was great. But if you got it wrong and you know how they got there by mistake, you're kind of like, whoa. They're trying to personalize this. This sucks.
So true.
You know what I mean? It's like the whole story about, you know, the story that the whole teen pregnancy thing is the parents finding out about it.
Oh, the Target
right,
one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a great one.
Yeah. I mean, that's personalization gone really, really wrong. And so it's dangerous. And so the question is, you know, and I think this is almost like the fundamental question that we are trying to figure out honestly ourselves is, in the balance between explicit and implicit technology, how do you figure out which makes sense? Explicit is opt-in. It's, you see, it's oak mirror, right? Like, really cool experience. You see other people using it. It's viral. It's awesome. It's engaging. You are actively using it. Versus implicit, which is things happening in the background and you don't know why, but everything just seems to be going better and easier. You know?
Right.
Like stockroom is an example. Things are in the right place for a time. You never have to ask for help. It's great. But I don't know why. What is that balance and how do you figure that out? I don't know the answer. I think about it a lot, but I think that's like kind of the ultimate question for the future of technology is what is that balance of kind of overtly new experiences and then things that just make life easier and how do you respect people's privacy while making their lives better? How do you make things, you know, faster? One of the big things across every channel is no one wants to wait for anything. Doesn't matter if it's right. luxury or fast fashion, you know, no one wants to wait. I was just talking with this massive, actually really interesting, this really massive holding company. It's one of the kind of worldwide most known holding companies of fashion brands and luxury channels. And they're saying that the average session in some of the luxury chains takes 45 minutes. 25% of those, or sorry, 25 of the 45 minutes that this company sees a customer spending in their stores, the customer is spent alone waiting.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I don't know. I've only been in a couple super stuck up stores, but yeah, I spent a lot of time waiting. And that's, I was like, well, I guess it's part of it, but no.
Huh.
So what's the balance between all of this stuff? It's a
robots. Just kidding.
In your spine.
Yeah, that's I think what you're hinting at is something that I don't think we've said, but I feel like needs to be said is to do this well, to excel in this space in the next 5 years, retailers are going to have to exercise an unbelievable amount of restraint because we have so much available at our fingertips now. We're going to have to really decide and make educated decisions on what we employ in the service of the customer and not in service of, you know, our businesses or in service of technology.
The simple expression is just don't do tech for the sake of tech, period.
Yeah. Nice. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Healy. I think, it's great having you with some really fantastic insights. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners? Maybe something in the next 5 years they should pay attention to.
Customers, and this is really has nothing to do with retail. I would encourage people to look out for self-preservation and to figure out when they're leading their life themselves and to experience it versus leading their lives to record it and share it with others for them telling them that it's a good life they're leading. I think it's a really dangerous battle. And I encourage everyone to be very introspective about it because the point of living this life is to live it for your experience. It's not for others to try to experience it via social media.
Nice.
Wow. That's
great thought at the end.
Great place to end. So thank you so much. Thank you to our guest, Healy Cipher. Thank you. You can visit it out online at Oak Labs. And thank you for listening to Future Commerce. We want to get your feedback on today's show, so make sure to leave it in the discuss comment box below. And if you're subscribed on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. And that's it. Until next week, keep looking towards the future. There you go. Oh, we say that in tandem now? That's a little weird, but I like that.
Oh, man, I know. Yeah. Oh, I should have done it in the falsetto like we started the show.
Thank you so much, Healy.
Guys, Phil, Brian, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being. Bye.